Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
You know what I mean? I think he's taken all the reps. I mean, most of the reps, I think he's continued to get into better condition. And we'll see how he responds from today, from the speed work today. And then we'll go and make a decision that, you know, is best for him and best for the football team.
Fair to say you're playing this Sunday?
I'm excited.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
WEEI Afternoons, a meeting of the Boston sports worlds. It's a Patriots Friday, and we are at Fenway Park, brought to you by Ford in our Ford Clubhouse Fenway studio, your New England Ford dealers in the Ford Summer Sales Event. Hurry in to get great deals now, including on F-Series, official truck of the Red Sox. That was Mike Vrabel talking about Christian Gonzalez. And Christian Gonzalez earlier in the week definitely insinuating, and maybe more so, that he's going to be returning to the field this week. I will say, speaking of returning to the field, Tet McMillan returned to the practice field yesterday. So that would be, Fitzy, a fun matchup of a young all-pro corner and a young wide receiver that I know some Patriots fans had their eyes on, who is, at least early in his career, showing he might be a pretty good receiver down there.
Yeah, how about that? A wide receiver one. Must be nice, huh?
Harrison can't catch. Interception machine.
Yeah, but he redeemed himself last night. He was good in the second
sort
half.
Of.
He had five catches and a touchdown, helped them tie the game. Oh,
still
by the way,
minus one. There were two interceptions and one touchdown. That's minus one in my math book.
Nice kick, Ryland, with 30 seconds left. Try to land it in the drop zone. Anyway, Tet McMillan versus Christian Gonzalez. If both of them are a wee bit limited, regardless, would be a nice matchup this weekend. That's one of about, I don't know, maybe two things the Carolina Panthers offense has going for them. The other one just being, I don't know, YOLO, dumb luck. Like, there's really not much that they've been able to do. Like last week, they win 30-0, but it's mostly because their defense was excellent and the Falcons were just absolutely abysmal.
And as Mike McDaniel says, before you can win the game, you have to not lose the game, as he put in such an eloquent fashion after the Patriots game. Ted Johnson, before we get to the phone calls, I did a little research. So the knuckleball kickoff for the Panthers,
yeah,
that has allowed them to average, other teams have a 16-yard kickoff return average. The rest of the NFL is averaging 25+, so it's almost a 10-yard difference because of their little knuckleball.
Massive.
Thing.
That is huge.
It's weird.
Have you seen videos of it?
No.
I looked at videos.
Oh, it's awesome.
Cool. Yeah.
It's
how does he get
really
it to do
cool.
it?
You got me.
He doesn't turn it sideways, does he?
See, the film, I couldn't see how the ball was placed.
Yep.
You just see him, the back of him kicking it, and it's just, it's a trip, man.
I'm a little worried about it. You know, like, this is a team, the Patriots, that's been making some mistakes, some ball security issues, some things of that nature, and all of a sudden you got this guy with this, you know, Bugs Bunny knuckleball kick thing that Antonio Gibson's going to be, like, shaking back there. We all saw the Red Sox. Remember when Doug Mirabelli was gone and they couldn't catch the knuckleball and they had to bring Doug Mirabelli back by freaking escort from the state police? That knuckleballs can do weird things to people, man. So, Antonio Gibson, you better know what you're doing. And I don't even, how do you practice it? If you don't have a guy that can kick a knuckleball, how do you practice returning knuckleball kicks? The jugs machine have a knuckleball setting?
Yeah, I would think you would try to simulate it somehow, some way. Maybe you don't kick it, you throw a knuckleball.
I'm going to your guy, Pepper Johnson, your coach used to be great.
He was amazing.
He threw the best knuckle football I've ever seen.
Pepper, we used to, after every practice,
he did. Damn ball, I don't know what you're laughing.
Did you ever see what we did after every Friday practice? You guys weren't there.
No, we weren't there at the end of practice.
They didn't allow you guys
No.
Access.
They barely allowed us anything.
Did you get pizza on Friday?
No. Once Tom Ashworth brought me a slice because he's the nicest player that ever played there.
Because he's a Colorado Buff, baby. That's how we roll.
He's the nicest Colorado Buff because he brought me pizza.
I'm the second nicest.
You're the second because you never brought me pizza.
But Pepper had the strongest arm, and we'd have this drill game where he would basically the first person to drop a pass would had to get out, and I usually was the first person to drop the pass.
But that pinky over there, was that from one of the knuckleballs?
It was the hardest ball I've ever had to catch with Pepper Johnson. But we digress.
Let's go to the phone line, 617-779-7937. Brandon in Boston said that if the Patriots lose on Sunday, firing Mike Vrabel should be on the table. I don't think Tim in Hanover agrees. What's up, Tim?
Guys, I tell you, I've been keeping a positive attitude to him, even though it sounds negative. But the deal is, if whoever thinks that Mike should be fired on Sunday if we lose, they're smoking whacked-out tobacco, buddy, because there's no way in hell we should beat this team. But we're a bottom 10 team, man. We're equal with these other guys. We don't have the talent. It's like Cora. Cora with the Red Sox, he's doing the best he can with that team. And that's how Mike is. Mike, you can only work with what talent you have until you get the better talent. Our offensive line got to protect for our quarterback and open holes for our running backs, man. That's what we need.
Thanks for the call, Tim. I tend to agree. Like, this early in the season, we're not talking about firing Mike Vrabel. Hell, this early in the season last year, we weren't talking about firing Jerod Mayo. And that ended up being a debacle of a season. So it's way too early for any of that crap in places where you have a first-year coach, right? There's a reason the guys that top all those lists, Fitzy, are like Daboll and Callahan and guys that have been in cities for at least a year, if not multiple years. Year one is you kind of setting your culture and establishing who you are. Now, Jerod Mayo thought he was going to get years two and three, and well, he found out differently at the end of the year.
Well, Jerod Mayo was done dirty from Jump Street by not getting any coordinators or basically any people to run any position or personnel departments.
Well, how is he done dirty, though? Wasn't that his job to hire those guys?
No, that was not a Jerod Mayo team in the law. Like, he basically had to entrust Elliot Wolf to hire everybody else. Put it this way.
Because he wasn't ready to go. He should have had his own staff ready to go, and he didn't.
Yeah, he didn't.
He was getting this job long before he got it, and he was so unprepared that he had to go to Elliot Wolf for help to get all his coaching staff.
Yeah, okay, yeah, exactly. But at the same time, I don't think he got a lot of organizational support either. I think the second they were able to use him as a scapegoat to admit that last season was an unmitigated disaster and also that Robert Kraft could saw Vrabel's open and knew the optics were bad Jump Street, I think they absolutely scapegoated him.
You got to be kidding me. You're putting all this on the Krafts?
I don't think Jerod
long before he got it. Remember, it was negotiated in Israel. He didn't have a coaching staff ready. He didn't have a philosophy. He didn't have a vision. He was so ill prepared, and that's the Kraft's fault. That's on him, man.
I can't give him 100% of the blame for last year.
I would give him most of the blame.
Well, regardless of what, if you want to split it up 55-45, 60-40, 70-30, whatever, I still believe that he was not done right by the team last year. I don't. I really think that they could, if they knew they were hiring a coach that was greener than the trees in your backyard or the grass on your front lawn, then they should have held his hand and done more to prepare him for a job he was ill-suited to take.
Why would they give a guy a job that he's ill-suited to take in the first place?
I don't know. He wasn't the right guy. That's why they got out from under it immediately.
But you understand, he told them he was the right guy. He convinced them. He bamboozled them. He persuaded them that he was the right guy. So they thought they were hiring the right guy. They didn't think they were hiring the wrong guy when they hired him. That's ridiculous.
Do you think that the Kraft's ownership and the entirety of the Patriots operation thought that Jerod Mayo was completely the right guy? Do you really think that they were snake oil sold his ability?
I hope they thought he was the right guy. Why would you hire him if he didn't think he was the right guy?
Right.
No. Meaning, where they sold a bill of goods by Mayo? Like, did he talk them into it,
I think so.
Well, but some of that's on them, and in that I think when you say, so if I hire you, what's your plan?
How do you envision the offense? Who do you envision running your offense? Who are some guys around the league that you would call to be your offense? Right. Aren't some of those that I've never been in a coaching interview from an ownership perspective, but if I'm the owner, those are the questions I'm asking.
You know what? Jerod Mayo, when he got hired as assistant in 2019, the first day he was there, oh, he's being groomed to be a head coach.
Right.
He's known. Mm-hmm. There was an article planted in the Houston Chronicle talking about him wanting to be a head coach. And then 5 years later, he gets to be the head coach, and he's like, I don't know what I'm doing. That's on Jerod. Please give me a break.
What do you mean by planted in the Houston Chronicle? I just wanted to clarify on that. Like there was a story down in Houston about Jerod Mayo, kind of like Houston should be interested in Jerod Mayo. Is that the inclination?
Aaron Wilson.
Interesting. Very, very. Because there was definitely a lot of – I remember he got an interview with, I think, the Eagles when they hired Sirianni.
No, they wouldn't let him. The organization didn't want to – they did. I think, if I'm not mistaken, they denied coordinator interviews because they wanted to keep him in-house. They were so
certain. He got a head coaching interview, I believe, when Nick Sirianni got hired. In that hiring process, he interviewed, I believe, with Howie Roseman and the ownership group down there. And I was like, wow, this is fast-tracking a guy well beyond. But forget that. The bottom line is he wasn't prepared. He was not prepared
Correct.
To take the job.
Definitely not.
And therefore, you're right, his staff had to be mostly Elliot Wolf's staff. Right back till, and you guys may not remember it, I was there at the press conference when he introduced his entire staff, and he said, and who knows, we may have to have another one of these next year. This staff may not be right. There may need to be some changes. And I was like, you haven't held a single practice, and you're already sort of foreshadowing that you're going to be changing or altering your coaching staff, hiring different people. It was a debacle, and this is not a debacle at that level. But I did want to ask you, Ted, something specifically today. When he was talking about Ramondre Stevenson, Mike Vrabel said, well, we're not going to play Josh Dobbs. We're not going to bench the quarterback because he turned the ball over twice, so we're not going to bench Ramondre Stevenson. What are your thoughts on that type of logic and comment?
I'm sorry. I was distracted. Say that again.
So Mike Vrabel, when asked about Ramondre Stevenson, would there be discipline in terms of he said, no, there's not going to be. We're not going to bench the quarterback and play Josh Dobbs because the quarterback turned it over twice.
Gotcha.
We're not going to bench Ramondre Steve. Like, are those the same things, the logic,
It's Mike's is new age, man. He's old school, but he's not coaching stylistically the way he was coached. It's a different style.
Okay.
It's just
– love more than hate kind of thing, or whatever?
It's patience. It's – understanding. It's you could call it coddling, you can call it protecting, but it's a nicer way of leading your team. And I don't, some might say, well, that'll lead to, you know, these guys are gonna be appreciative of your patience with them and they will reward you. That's what he's hoping is, like, right. Look, I'm gonna have your guys' backs, and I'm gonna, you know, when it gets hot and you guys aren't performing, I'm gonna have your back. But you have to prove me right eventually, and that's kind of the hope, the way he coaches, and that's risky.
Yeah.
You know, you just never know.
So he gave a game ball to Andy Borogales, for example, in the locker room. After he missed two PATs, he had a game ball.
Right.
He missed two PATs and missed the landing zone, but in between hit a field goal, and that was game ball worthy. You might be right. He might be. I know John Wooden, the classic UCLA coach, a positive coaching alliance. There's this whole, like, organization built on him, and it's about positive reinforcement. I think it's 9-1. Yep. 9 positive comments for every 1 critical comment, or something like
that. He also said that the players don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. That was a John Wooden saying as well.
Look at you. Fitzy, you got any John Wooden quotes in you?
I just happened to be day late and a dollar short of my job.
I mean, it you can say all that when you have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar as your is your center too, right?
You know, you can say do your job when you have Tom Brady. Everybody else, do your job, because we got Brady. We'll be A-okay if you guys just show up, line up right. 617.
No days off. Do your job. Let's go, Tom.
617-779-7937. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to Rich in the car.
Hi, guys. Now, I agree with one of you guys saying that, you know, Mayo kind of got a dirty deal there. I think he did. They knew he was a first-year coach. Was all this talk about being collaborative and it was going to be a multi-year process. And, you know, he came in thinking he was going to be able to spend money and bring free agents in, and he wasn't, you know, he had to pull that back. He wasn't allowed to do that. So I think it's just very different with Vrabel, because, you know, he's been able to bring in free agents. He's more of an experienced coach, but you know, as of right now, he's not doing that much better than Mayo was. So I definitely think he got a raw deal. He didn't, you know, this it was supposed to be, you know, he has a couple of years to figure this out and get them to a good place. But 1 year, not getting any help, not any free agents. I mean, he was set up to fail from the beginning. He had no shot.
Thanks for the call, Rich.
I respectfully disagree.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't know if he had no shot. He was given a chance, and I think once you realize how bad it is, what's that, like bad money after good or something like that?
You know what? People ask me all the time, Ted, you would, if they offered you a head coaching job, you would take it? No, I wouldn't. Right. If I didn't think I was prepared and ready to do the job, I would not want the job.
Right.
And so I put more blame on Gerard because he should have known what he was getting into, and it was like he had no clue what he was getting into, and he was a coach there on the assistant staff for 5 years before he got the head job. Like, you can't tell me you didn't know what to be ready for.
Right. Yeah. No, he wasn't ready. And there was, it's a little like what I told you, Fitzy, about Matt Patricia. Like, sometimes you just got to say no. Yeah, no, this opportunity not right.
Right.
For
exactly.
Me.
That's it, Andy.
I can't do that. Have some pride, respect for the job. I always said that about Patricia. Have some respect for the job that most offensive coordinators have been coaching offense for 10, 12, 15 years, have worked up from quarterbacks to wide receivers to play calling to this, to that, and you're just going to slide from one side of the ball to the other and think you can do the job as well as those other 31? That's really egotistical. Really egocentric. Really.
Do we think Mayo would have been any better last year if he or the organization gave him better coordinators than DeMarcus Covington and Alex Van Pelt?
You know what? They gave him. He should have brought his own coordinators in. Like, that is on Gerard Mayo. If you don't have coordinators that you have cultivated relationships with in your time being in the NFL, then you cannot blame the coordinators they brought in for him because that should have been his job to get the coordinators. And I'm sorry. I mean, I just don't think Gerard knew what he was getting into. Things I've heard, I
concur with that. So, don't forget, Alex Van Pelt was coordinator 12 on the interview list for offensive coordinators.
Right.
And by the way, Nick Caley, good call not taking him. I don't think Houston scored a touchdown yet. Love
can
you,
I
Nick,
tell you? Yeah, it, do you know what their percentage of red zone touchdowns are this year?
Zero.
They're dead last. Zero. They haven't scored a red zone touchdown all year.
Nailed it. Let's go back to the phone lines with a little game related call. Joe and Melrose. What's up, Joe?
Hey guys. First off, I agree with Fitzy. Gerard Mayo was done dirty last year. If they had drafted. Ladd McConkey and signed a left tackle, he'd still be here. But anyway, I think the key for the Patriots this year is to keep the offense balanced. If they have an effective running game and it allows Drake May to be efficient, like in the Raiders' first half of the game, he was really efficient. In the second half, when they only threw the ball three times, it's like putting the whole game on him, and he feels like as a franchise quarterback, he has to win the game by himself, and that's where the turnovers occur. I mean, they played a really balanced game, balanced run as offense and rushing and passing in the Miami game, and Drake May was outstanding. And then when the Pittsburgh game came and the running backs like turned it, fumbled it three times, it puts him in a situation where he feels like he has to win the game. And when you put that situation on him, that's where the turnovers occur. So as long as the Patriots can have like just an effective running game where they're not fumbling the ball, Drake May is going to be a top 10 quarterback.
Thanks for the call, Joe. Ted Johnson, is that one of the keys this week against a Carolina defense that you should be able to run on?
The key.
The key.
Okay, so you guys ready for
Solamente
this?
Solamente un.
Okay, here we go. We're going to a little football 101.
Well,
you ready?
Go.
So the stat everyone's talking about. Do you know that the Patriots offense has faced the most 7-man boxes of any team in the NFL so
yes.
far through 3 weeks?
Indeed.
Yeah. What does that tell you? If you had to surmise, so 7 guys are in the box and not 8 guys. So theoretically, you should be able to do what better if you're facing 7-man boxes?
Throw the ball.
No, run the ball. It's
yeah,
7
they,
man. You,
right.
you take a guy out of the box, so there's less guys in the box, so it means you run it. When they bring an 8th guy down into the box, that means you're crowding the box, and that's when you start passing. So cover 2, teams are playing them on cover 2, 2 safeties deep.
Yep.
That means there's got to be 7 guys in the box. That's when you run, and they are terrible running in 7-man boxes. So the point is they are the least efficient team in running the football because they can't run it in a look that most teams dominate with just 7 guys. They don't have to bring an eighth guy down to stop the run. That was what made our defenses so good, that we could play cover two, and because we could stop the run with seven. They cannot run the football with seven-man boxes, and that is killing this offense.
You think that's the line, or is that the running backs?
Oh, it's mostly the line.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Go ahead, Andy. No, I was just going to say they only have one wide receiver in the top 50 in terms of receiving yards, a Kayshon Booty with 140. Their receivers aren't winning on the outside either.
Yeah, no, there's – I mean, Ty has been big on that forever. Ty Law, I feel like every time there's a Ty Tuesday on the Greg Hill Show, is talking about how if I were a corner, there's nobody – there's no players I fear running by me, beating me, embarrassing me in the passing game. And that's true.
That was his attitude, yeah.
I
loved it.
But I think even more so with this team, because he looks at – your best receiver is Hunter Henry, correct? Nice player. Is he going to embarrass you? He's going to get his little 12-yard catch, and then you'll tackle him, and you'll live to fight another play. Like, there's nobody going to expose you. Pop Douglas is supposed to be that guy. He's supposed to be a slot guy with playmaking ability. Everybody told me he's – remember that one play that Drake hit to him in practice? There was like a deep over, and it was like he got behind the defense. I haven't really seen that. I haven't seen that at all. And I don't think defenses fear that either. But from the running game perspective, so you haven't been able to run the ball as effectively as you'd like against normal box, normal look, and now your left guard, who everybody loves, Jared Wilson, isn't going to play. You're going to have Ben Brown back out there. And then Mike Onwenu is banged up, and he's missed some practice time at right guard. So I'm not sure the ability to run the ball is going to get any easier, although the Panthers may allow it to be a little easier because they're just not very good stopping the run.
They rank 25th against the run.
But I think we all agree that
the Patriots are 27th in rushing, so they're both basically suck at
it. It's kind of like the road record for the Panthers, the home record. Yep. Like, all these numbers say just crappy football game between two crappy teams, but somebody's going to win. Or maybe you have a little more optimism. Seemed like Mike Giardi had a little more optimism, like Fitzy. So we'll get back into that in a little bit. But we got to talk a little Red Sox baseball, as we do many Fridays here on WEEI Afternoons. Our guy Rob Bradford was up in Toronto for the disappointment last night. We'll talk a little Red Sox potential clinch with Rob Bradford next on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball has what's trending.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
WEEI Afternoons at Fenway Park. Happy Clinch Day, part two. Didn't go great yesterday. Clinch Day, day one.
They really wanted to clinch it here.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Like the Celtics, they kind of had closeout games on the road, and they're like, nah, let's close it back at home.
Bayo was like, I'll load the bases. I'll leave. You give up a grand slam, we'll be able to go back to Fenway.
Trevor Story's like, I'll boot another ball.
Yeah, and he's been paving the way for that by booting balls for like seven straight games, right. So it's believable. Right. Nobody will think you're on the take if you do it 7 days in a row.
Right.
Let's go to the phone lines with our buddy Rob Bradford. Rob Bradford is brought to you on WEEI Afternoons by McFarland Energy, the heating, cooling, and bioheat delivery pros that Eastern Mass and all of Cape Cod depend on at McFarlandEnergy.com.
McFarland.
I mean, between the Ace of Spades, between McFarland, you just threw in, the cougar just went in the car. The cougar is in the car. Lower the heart rate. Let's go.
So, Bradfo.
The cougar in the car. The cuckoo in the car.
Any truth to the idea that they maybe let up a little bit so they could clinch at home tonight?
No. You know how I know this? I love this. You know how I know this is that because the owners flew up to Toronto. I don't think the owners are flying up to Toronto unless you actually have
actually are thinking that you might actually be celebrating something. So I think that was a sign that they were ready to go. Everything was in position. And then the sad trombone, no, all of a sudden you have to get on a plane, go back to Boston, and hope that you aren't clinching at 1 o'clock in the morning by watching a television set with Houston losing in Anaheim.
Yeah, you never want to back. I mean, listen, you'll take it any which way you can get it, especially after at times it never felt like a certainty this season, Bradfo. So if you got to back in, you back in. But I know they would love to win it in front of their fans on a beautiful Friday night at Fenway. How are you feeling about the possibility of one of the arms acquired in the Rafael Devers trade being the man who can take the mound? Like, that would be a nice coda on the one of these wild regular seasons for the Sox.
Yeah, I mean, we're basically Russell Crowe and Beautiful Mind staring at the glass trying to figure out if Rafael Devers' trade was a good thing or a bad thing.
Like the Garoppolo trade 8 years ago, like so many permutations.
That's where we're at, right? I can't prove it, but you're just going to have to take my word for it. But I think this would be a huge feather in the cap. And you know, it's funny because you talk to the players, we remember that for so many months, we said, Kyle Harrison, you didn't get anything back for this guy. Jordan Hicks, he hasn't really contributed at all. But if Kyle Harrison goes on a run, if Kyle Harrison wins this game, and all of a sudden he does something in the postseason, everybody's going to be screaming like, oh my goodness, what a trade. Like, not only did you get the money, not only did you get the vibes, you got Kyle Harrison as well. And this happens every year. We see it every single time. Remember Nathan Eovaldi? He stunk in September in 2018. Joe Kelly, he wasn't even going to be on the postseason roster. And then next thing you know, we're saying, oh, of course, they were awesome in the World Series run. It happens, and I think it could start tonight with Harrison.
Hey, Bradfo, I'm just going to assume that they're going to make the playoffs. So for the sake of my question, let's just assume that. And I'm trying to figure out, you know, the Red Sox lead the league in Major League Baseball in errors, right? And there's been no team that has won the pennant that's also led the league in errors. And then they also lead the league in leading men on and runners on base at over 15 runners a game, and then 28th in runners left in scoring position per game. Those two things to me are just glaring issues for this team. Can they overcome those things and make a run? I mean, are one of those things going to catch up to them eventually here?
You're right, Ted. Science and math are not on the 2025 Red Sox side. but you know what? I mean, there's the thing is, it's a microcosm of their lot in life, the American League reality. We saw it with Toronto. The American League reality is that everyone's flawed. Cleveland, this team that won 15 and 16 games, the hottest team around, they have a negative run differential. All of it's nuts. And so I think, how can the Red Sox do that with those numbers that you just put out? Rightfully so put out, by the way. Yeah, but we just saw it. We saw it over the last week. Let's take runners in scoring position. They've had more runners in scoring position than any major league team over the last 2 weeks. Now, that's great, but you got to get them in. The first week, they weren't getting them. Last week, they were. But that's the roller coaster that you're riding, and that's their lot in life because they don't hit home runs. They don't hit a lot of home runs. That's how they have to play. We saw how they can win playing that way. But if you don't get some string hits together, then you're going to end up citing those stats over and over and over again.
And Bradfo, just to prove your point, although the Red Sox ranked 28th in leaving runners in scoring position per game at almost four, the Yankees and the Brewers are worse. And they're both, yeah. You know, and the Brewers had the best record in Major League for a long time. So, and the Yankees are leading the division. So, just to prove your point there.
So, Bradfo,
and you know what? Real quick, and you know, I just piggyback that. You know why? Because everybody swings and misses all the time. That's the problem. And that's one of the things, even though Toronto didn't look good, like, give me the team that makes contact when it counts the most. So, and that's just my own thing, but go ahead.
Also, if I wanted to try to be optimistic or put a shine on it, I'd say to leave runners on base, you have to get runners on base.
Good point, Andy.
Yeah. So you're getting good guys on point. Base.
Funny how that works.
And speaking of putting a positive spin on things, my guy Yoshida, everything he's my guy. About a month and a half ago, I said I never wanted to see him on my NESN TV screen ever again because I hated ground balls to second base. And now he's like a two hits per game machine. He's hitting the ball out of the ballpark. Has he gotten right? Do you think he's gotten right and we can count on him in the playoffs to be a decent hitter, or is this fool's gold?
No, well, we don't. First of all, he tears it up in Toronto, so that's one thing to keep in mind. But I will say this, is that they've kept promising this. They kept saying it's around the corner. They kept saying it's a major shoulder. If I have to hear one more time about it's major shoulder surgery, I get it. It was a major shoulder surgery. But still, like, you're waiting and you're waiting and you're waiting, and I'm right there with you. You're just exhausted writing 4-3 in the scorecard. But then this we've seen semblances of this guy. We have. It's been a long, long time. You still have the image of this guy in the WBC, the first introduction we had to him, hitting behind Ohtani and hitting an enormous three-run bomb on the biggest stage there was. I mean, there are moments in there, and there's ability in there. But I just think that we have to ride this out. It's impossible to tell that if, you know, you think you go through this weekend, all of a sudden become the 4-3 guy all over again. I do know this. I think people sleep on the fact that when Roman Anthony went down, it is what it is. But Yoshida had to be a guy who stepped up because of the side of the plate he hit from, because of the part in the order that he was hitting in, how he made everything else work. And when, if you look at this win, these wins on this road trip, I think that's an enormous, enormous part of this equation, because, you know, when he wasn't going, we were screaming and yelling about Roman Anthony. Last week, we haven't been.
Bradfo, the closest thing to automatic on this baseball team right now is Whitlock in the eighth and Chapman in the ninth. However, it's the playoffs, and Cora's going to manage aggressively and go to that that bullpen if he needs to early and often. Do we have a feel for who might maybe kind of sort of possibly be his seventh inning guy, so that we have like a mighty triumvirate there?
Yeah, it's a good point, because to go back to the Devers thing, they wanted Hicks to be that guy, and that went out the window pretty quick. And so now, you know, Matz has been pretty good, but he's been hit hard lately. Wilson has been really good this year, but he's been hit hard a little bit lately. You're still searching. And obviously with Cora, the wild card, anytime we mention this in the postseason, is, well, okay, which starter are you going to put there? You remember, going back to 2018, before that game against the Yankees, Stephen Wright was supposed to be the eighth inning guy. At the last minute, something happens to him. All of a sudden, I think Nathan Eovaldi came in the eighth inning that game, like out of nowhere. So, yeah, you can take a starter and put him there, but you don't really know who that is right now. Maybe it's the guy pitching tonight. Who knows? We don't know. Like, that could be a very real possibility. I think they also would love if Peyton Tolley became that guy, but right now it doesn't look like he's going to be that guy, despite getting the 100-mile-an-hour T-shirt the other day. Still, I mean, I think that he has a ways, yeah. He has a ways to go. And so it's a really good question and an important question. And I asked Cora this, and he kind of gave me like the smirk, like, I don't know what I'm talking about, but I think I do, which is, I do feel like you're still feeling your way around the roster a little bit, and that you have to figure out exactly what you have. Maybe he knows. Maybe he knows more than I do. But when that game one comes around, you know, it'll be really, really interesting to see who he leans on the most in that spot you're talking about.
Hey, Bradfo, what do you think about just hitters 1-4? You got Jaron Duran leading off, Trevor Story second, Bregman 3, Yoshida 4. That's kind of been the lineup here recently. Andy called out the manager for switching Story and Bregman in their positions, but it seems to be fine with those two. I'm just a little bit nervous about Jaron Duran in the one spot. Just after seeing what Roman Anthony did there, it was just like, man, he just set the bar so high. How do you feel about that order, and do you think Trevor Story is in the two spot to stay?
Yeah, I don't mind Story the two spot. And that's what baseball does now. They put usually their best hitter there, and he's been their best hitter. So, you know, okay, that's fine, as long as he keeps on rolling. And, you know, Bregman's Bregman. You know, obviously, you got to take the good and the bad with him, and you got to ride this Yoshida hot streak. But to go to the top of the order, this is the thing that we talked about, Roman Anthony. Well, okay, you got some of the production from the left side of Yoshida, but Yoshida, I know he played. We should save the scorecard for that one game he hit leadoff, because I'm like, it was the slowest leadoff hitter in the history of baseball, and I don't think that experiment was going to last very long. Duran's the best option, but the problem with Duran right now is that he's swinging and missing a ton, and he's not really hitting lefties. It's not a perfect scenario, but it's what you have, and I think that the hope for them. You get the good Duran, you get the dynamic Duran, you get the Duran who's going to get on a hot streak. change the game with his legs, and then you ride it. But to answer your question, I just don't – they don't have any other options to put a guy there.
Yeah.
All right, Bradfo, before we let you go, I am going to pose a question to you that I posed to my Twitter followers. What aspect of the Red Sox do you feel best about heading into the postseason? The four options are starting pitching, bullpen, lineup, or manager.
I think, honestly, manager. I do.
Yep.
And, I think a close second would maybe, I can't even say starting pitching because, you know, after Crochet, you know, we just don't know. Mm-hmm. And so, I think manager. I don't think you can sleep on what Cora did in the first two times we saw him manage in postseason games, especially in 18. I mean, he was just on an unbelievable heater. But I think that he bob and weaves his way through these postseason games, these postseason series, and usually we're coming along away from it like, wow, that was really, really good. So I think that, you know, we can criticize Cora for different points this year for stuff that he's done. But I think that if you're going to rate what manager that you would want in the postseason off of what we've seen and what we know, he would be the.
All right, Bradfo, let's hope the Red Sox come out hotter than a house heated by McFarland tonight clinch a spot in the playoffs.
Hey, I'll see you guys at 1 o'clock in the morning at Gate D to celebrate the Houston Astros loss. That's going to be great.
All right, Bradfo. Have a good night, Bradfo. Right.
See you, Bradfo.
Rob Bradford brought to us by McFarland Energy, as always. Come up next, we're going to answer that question, and we're going to rate those four areas of the Red Sox. We're going to add defense. What is your confidence level from 1 to 10 with the starting pitching, the bullpen, the lineup, the manager, and the defense? That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
You can stream the show or listen on demand anytime. Just download the Odyssey app.
That's AUDACY.
Save WEEI as a favorite and listen wherever you go. Now, more of WEEI Afternoons.
With Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Yeah, I think just not finishing the play. I think that's it. Late in the season, you know, I think, you know, your body can get tired, but that's no excuse. It's really just not finishing the play. So it's on me. I gotta be obviously very diligent about finishing the throw, and I haven't done that. That's where it's come from.
Trevor Story last night, after unfortunately another error, Nesson tweeted that out and said always accountable, and he kind of led with an excuse. He said fatigue late in the year, but I won't. You know, it is what it is.
I won't say it on the radio.
I just said it on the radio.
You're like on hole 16. It's 100 degrees out. You've been playing terrible, and it's like you just lose your focus for a little bit. And that sneaks up on you, Trev.
Or for him, it's been like hole 9, 10, 11 12, 13, 14.
Right. 6 errors in 7 games.
I actually have concerns about this. Like, you make an error. I said to Dan Ball, the example, like, you're playing the Yankees and you make an error and someone gets on and then Judge is behind him and hits a home run. The guy shouldn't have been on because he should have been out, like, out of the inning.
The margin for error in these games are minuscule already, but then you add playoff in the pitching. It's even more of a refined margin.
All right, so this was an idea from our boss man, Ken Laird. He wanted to take today's poll, which I looked for the confidence level of Red Sox Nation in the areas of the team right now. And just for the record, the fans voted for starting pitching, and I want to get the latest number. 48% said that the part of the team they feel best about is the starting pitching. I think that's interesting because I agree with it if you're thinking about Crochet. Mm-hmm. Anybody after Crochet, I don't know how I feel about Bayo. I don't know how I feel about Giolito afterwards, but whatever, that's how they voted. Second place was bullpen with 26%. What? Third place was the manager with 16%, and the lineup was in last at 10%. Brad Foe said it's the manager. I like the manager. I think you like the manager. I think we feel good about him pulling some strings. But let's do it right here. Our confidence level 1 to 10. This was Ken's idea. So let's start right at the top, the controversial one, the manager. Between 1 and 10, 10 being the most confidence you could possibly have in somebody in that role, Ted Johnson, the manager.
8.
Ted Johnson says 8.
I think 8
big Johnsons.
Look, I think Brad Foe said it. You know, he was kind of a wizard in the 2018 playoffs. That's kind of what he's, you know, when he has to really, really micromanage a game in high leverage situations, that's kind of when he's at his best typically. So history would say that. So to me, this is Alex Cora's time to shine is right in playoff time.
Fitzy.
I'm going to give him a 9, and the only reason why I don't go to 10 is because of his love for Greg Weissert. Otherwise, I think I'd give him a 10. Every now and again, he just gets a little cute, a little precious, or puts in the wrong guy in the sixth when his starter goes 5 1/3 and ends up putting two guys on. But otherwise, I have full faith, and not just because we enjoy the interviews, not just because he's a dude, I have full, complete faith in Alex Cora to make the right decisions for this baseball team.
Can I interrupt real quick before
sure.
you have yours? Just like, doesn't it feel like Alex sometimes he goes off script a little bit? Like it becomes more of a feel?
I was just going to say that. You stole my answer. All first right. of all, I was going to say 10 because yep. I love Alex Cora. He's my guy AC for life.
Oh.
But second of all, oh. I feel like in the postseason, it's actually Alex Cora. His gut, his feeling, his brain, his nose, whatever, you know, spidey senses. I feel like mm-hmm. the guy who's been in baseball for 50 years is allowed to just say, yeah, I feel like I should do this. Right now it's, you know, fourth inning, two outs. This is what – exactly, Ted. Yep. I don't think there's any more Brezbot computer printouts. Oh, 80 pitches, any of that crap. I think it's actually Cora managing. That's why I'm putting it at 10.
Okay.
Best manager in the
game.
You
know what? You always hear a story of like, you know, yeah, I talked to him before game. I could just see it in his eyes.
Yes.
It's those kind of stories where he just, you know what? I just knew he was due.
Right. Or the opposite. Like, yep, not putting him in. Did you see him? His knees were shaking before right. we even had the anthem that night.
Right.
Okay. So let's go now to the lineup. Where are we with the lineup? Let's start with Fitzy.
The lineup?
The lineup. Jeez. That was the question. You answered the question with a question.
5, honestly. About a 5, sadly. Like it's because it's, and that's only, that's because it's one day could be a 10, the next day it's a 0. So I'm going to split the difference and say a 5.
Ted,
I'm going to say 6. I'm going to say 6. Trevor Story and Bregman starting to get going in Massa. So 6.
My guy, Massa. I got to go the other way. I got to go 4. I can't say I'm a big believer that stars win in the postseason and then look at this lineup and say, I'm super confident in this lineup. Who's the star of this
Bregman.
Lineup? Yeah, kind of. He looks like an aged star a little bit right now.
And Trevor Story, but Trevor, yes, no, yeah. 2 and 3.
Yeah, and you got two stars that aren't really stars. Like, they're really good players.
Bite your tongue.
But Aaron Judge is a – well, then what is Aaron Judge? If Bregman's a star, what's Aaron Judge?
Well, there's freaks and then there's super freaks.
So all-time greats. And we'll answer the rest of these after the break here on WEEI Afternoons to kick off today's Drive at 5 here at Fenway Park, where we are in our Ford Clubhouse Fenway studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and the Ford Summer Sales Event. Hurry in to get great deals now, including on F-Series, official truck of the Red Sox. The Drive is up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.